this really does rise to a level of a disaster that needs immediate relief.
Federal help for Lower Yukon fishermen. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 13th of May. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, reaction to the Ninth Circuit's rejection of a challenge to Shell's Arctic plans.
They have something on the order of 300 vessels responding to the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. I don't think that there are 300 vessels that are ice-hardened to deal with the spill in the Arctic.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by the University of Alaska Southeast, providing the challenge, the balance, the community, offering new degrees in geography and environmental studies and resources. Information at uas.alaska.edu.
Fishermen on the Lower Yukon have had two devastating king salmon seasons, but things are looking up. The Senate Appropriations Committee today voted to include relief money in its supplemental bill. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes reports.
The Appropriations Committee has included $5 million in the bill to help those who suffered from the Yukon king salmon crash. Senator Lisa Murkowski is on the committee. She says she had to explain that this was a fishing disaster in a different kind of area with a different kind of impact.
These are subsistence communities, and when you get slammed with high energy costs, like we face out in so many of our rural communities there on the Yukon, and have a fisheries failure so that you cannot feed your families, that this really does rise to a level of a disaster that needs immediate relief.
The Yukon River king salmon fishery was declared a federal disaster in January. The fishery was closed last year and was nearly 90% below the five-year average in 2008. Murkowski says the $5 million amount is based on losses for both seasons.
We all know that the losses that were experienced in the 2008-2009 fishing seasons have left people just very, very depleted in many ways. So this is exceptionally timely and exceptionally important.
Senator Mark Begich says the whole Alaska delegation has been working hard on getting the funding. He says the next step will be getting it past the full Senate and House, and he thinks it has a good chance.
We have a process here we have to go through on our end still, but just having it in the bill, the appropriations bill, is a critical first step.
Murkowski says she hopes to see it on the Senate floor in the next few weeks. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals today rejected a challenge to Shell Oil's exploratory drilling plan in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas off Alaska's coast. In a brief opinion issued by the three judges who heard the case last week in Portland, the judges found that the Federal Minerals Management Service had met its obligations for consideration of the potential threat to wildlife and the risk for disaster before it approved the Shell project. This was disappointing news for environmental organizations. Chris Krenz is with Oceana. He says there are deficiencies in Shell's plan, and his organization hoped the judges would see the risks. The Obama administration has put a hold on all offshore drilling activity until May 28th. Krenz says they will request that hold be extended.
They've asked Shell Oil Company for some further information about their drilling operation and assurances. They're looking for further assurances that they can conduct this drilling safely. And so right now, the focus is on the administration, and in particular, Secretary Salazar, to really think hard about the potential for an accident in the Arctic.
Krenz says in light of the BP well blowout in the Gulf, there are more questions than answers about how to safely conduct offshore drilling.
They have something on the order of 300 vessels responding to the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. I don't think that there are 300 vessels that are ice-hardened to deal with the spill in the Arctic. And certainly, if there was ice in the waters, it would be very difficult for them to try and deal with such a disaster.
But Shell Alaska Vice President Pete Slaby says there are significant differences in the operations. He says water depth is one. Shell plans on drilling in water 150 to 170 feet deep versus 5,000 feet in the Gulf. Slaby says well pressure is another consideration.
The pressures we're dealing with are about one-third of the pressure that you're dealing with in the Gulf, deeper water wells in the Gulf of Mexico. And you know, there's other important differences in the total depth of the well. Our wells are this year going to be, under 8,000 feet, and that's probably about 10,000 feet less than we have in the Gulf of Mexico, the recent Gulf of Mexico incident.
Slaby says there are still hurdles to Shell's plans. They need air permits, and there is another court challenge to the entire lease sale 193 plan unfolding in the D.C. court. He says because of the concern around offshore drilling caused by the Gulf disaster, Shell will be talking to communities in the Northwest Arctic.
We recognize that there is a change in dynamic after the 20th of April, and as part of that, we do anticipate spending time in the communities and talking about just how different the wells in Alaska, and the wells specifically Shell is drilling, are different than deep water wells anywhere in the world. So it is really, really important right now. People are clearly going to have questions, and we need to answer them about why we continue to believe in our program.
Today's ruling does remove one obstacle for Shell, which hopes to drill three exploratory wells in the Chukchi and two in the Beaufort this summer. May is Older Americans Month, a time to acknowledge the contributions and importance of our senior citizens in our communities. Unfortunately, it turns out that older Americans are also pretty popular with con artists, so much so that this week the Better Business Bureau issued a special scam alert. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Who would target a grandparent? According to Tara Sims, the Better Business Bureau's Alaska Public Relations Manager, a more accurate way to phrase that question is, why are so many scam artists so fond of seniors? Sim says one big reason is availability.
They're often more likely to be at home to answer the door or answer the phone, so they're easier to get a hold of for scam artists.
Other appealing elements attracting con artists who prey on seniors, they often are more trusting of strangers, especially when given a friendly pitch. They are less likely to do auto, home, or other repairs themselves. Then there are two major financial situations often associated with older people.
They tend to own their own home and carry high equity, which makes them predatory lending targets as well. They also have a fixed income, so promises for high returns or big savings can be more appealing.
And once the scam is successful, the criminals sometimes enjoy a certain protection.
Many seniors can be embarrassed to report fraud due to fear of losing control of their affairs.
Sim says con artists are masters at producing sympathy or fear in the targets of their scams. The grandparent scheme combines both emotions and has appeared in Alaska. According to Sim, normally the caller claims to be the grandchild or a friend.
They are either stuck in a foreign country, their wallet got stolen, they can't get back home, please send me some money, wire me some money. Or they say that they are driving and they got stuck and the tow truck won't accept their credit card. Can you quick wire me some money to this account? They also say sometimes that they were arrested for a crime that they didn't commit. And please just wire some money. Don't tell my parents.
Sim cites an Alaskan example showing the importance of not panicking over such grandchild in trouble calls.
They were luckily smart enough to contact their family member and ask if this was really happening to the grandchild. When they called, their daughter said, well, he's sleeping on the couch right now.
Other common scams directed at seniors include government impersonators attempting to get Social Security and bank account numbers, telemarketing offers that are too good to be true, fake charities, especially those claiming to be affiliated with a local group, savings and investment scams, repair cons, and fake lottery and sweepstake winnings.
We receive calls into our office on a daily basis about lotteries and sweepstakes.
Sims says some of these lottery and sweepstakes scams have moved beyond merely requesting a processing fee to send the winnings or to cover an unexpected check that bounces.
Many times what happens is there's real money attached to that check. And what you're doing is you're forwarding stolen money from another person or business's account to the scam artist. If that happens, you are responsible for paying all the money back to the rightful owner, including the money that's sitting in your account and the funds that you forwarded to the scam artist.
She says various ways to avoid being taken by scams are to get written contracts and verify licensing. Don't deal with businesses that refuse to provide detailed contact information. And call or visit the Better Business Bureau website for reliability reports and to find more scam prevention tips. The website is www.bbb.org. The Bureau is a not-for-profit organization and does not charge for its services. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, new vessels for seafloor mapping.
A big stainless steel unit with six arrays of what they call guns, and then the computers will fire these off.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Bethel veterans will get a chance to speak with some of the top administrators from the Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs tomorrow. The ADMVA is organizing a series of meetings across the state, and the first will be in Bethel. Bethel Representative Bob Huron says they're coming to the community to listen.
To take testimony from veterans and veterans' families about services that they may need.
Alaska has a higher percentage of veteran residents than any other state, and Huron says it's important that they use this opportunity.
I'm a member of the Legislative Veterans Caucus, and we think this is real important, and I would encourage people to testify if they have issues or they need help.
The Alaska Director of Veterans Affairs and the Rural Liaison for U.S. Division of Veterans Affairs are expected to attend. That meeting takes place tomorrow in the Bethel City Council Chambers. Future meetings are scheduled in Ketchikan on Tuesday and the Mat-Su Valley on May 22nd. More meetings are also being planned. Cruise ships started pulling into Alaska port cities last week, and their numbers will increase as the month progresses. But overall, the season will bring fewer ships and passengers than recent years. Businesses throughout the state are preparing by cutting back on hiring, merchandise, and tours. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld checked in with one southeast destination, Hoonah's Icy Strait Point, about how it's adjusting.
Members stay together as a group. I'll be in front. Zach will be in the back. Owen does have a safety arm with him.
Guide Elizabeth Jack leads a busload of tourists down a trail in search of brown bears last summer. They reach a tree-covered boardwalk overlooking a grassy meadow, and out come the cameras. Jack provides a quiet narrative.
A sow might come and check us out, just to see what we're all about, because she wants to protect her cubs, and she'll want to make sure that we're safe and we're no harm to her and her cubs.
The tour is one of Icy Strait's most popular excursions. Several thousand cruise ship tourists paid about $100 each last season to search for wildlife. But this summer, fewer people may hop on the bus. That's because the big ships will make only 63 port calls at this renovated cannery about 40 miles west of Juneau. Last season, there were 69, about 10% more. Icy Strait's biggest problem this year has more to do with when than how many ships arrive. President Johan Dybdahl says the small attraction is used to seeing just one ship a day. This year, they'll double up.
We're going to be offering different kinds of things on those particular days. And in fact, we're going to be offering a tour on our whale watching that we're calling Wine and Whales. And so we're trying to be fleet of foot and be nimble.
The Hoonah Totem Village Native Corporation is the attraction's owner. Its Tlingit shareholders and their families and neighbors hold most of Icy Strait's 100 or so jobs. The drop in ships plus the new schedule means work hours will be shorter and on fewer days. But Dybdahl says that may work for employees.
They do love to spend a lot of time in the summertime picking berries and harvesting fish and smoking fish. And so they'll actually work fewer days of the week, but on those long days, of course, the overtime will make up for it, so they'll probably make about the same amount of money. They'll just have a lot more time to do other things.
Icy Strait's most famous attraction is a mile-long zip line that sends riders flying over the rainforest, but the bear search and other wildlife watching tours are equally popular. Icy Strait is just one of many tour businesses trying to squeeze success out of a smaller season. Total Alaska cruise ship passenger numbers are expected to drop 14% this year, with towns such as Sitka seeing far larger reductions. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Firefighters are securing the perimeter of a wildfire that raced through dry tundra, grass, and black spruce north of Healy last night. The fire burned 260 acres on the east side of the park's highway across the road from a subdivision. State Forestry Information Officer Maggie Rogers says a multi-agency air and ground response successfully knocked down the wind-driven blaze.
They had two helicopters that responded from forestry, and they did manage to drop three loads of retardant on that using two tankers.
Rogers says five crews remain on scene mopping up the fire. She says high winds last night resulted in several small spot fires across the park's highway, but they were all caught. The flames came close to burning a home on the property where the fire started. Fairbanks Area Forestry Fire Prevention Officer and investigator Mike Goyette says the fire was sparked accidentally when a resident started a snow machine.
The individual went to move the snow machine to put it away for the summer. When they started the snow machine, it backfired. The backfire had enough heat and flames, burning material coming out of it, that it ignited the grass around the snow machine.
Goyette says the flames traveled quickly due to the dry, windy conditions, but the homeowner was able to protect their residence. No private property was damaged by the fire, and Goyette says the individual who started it will not face any criminal charges or fines because there was no negligence involved. Human-caused wildfires are common during the pre-greenup period, but Goyette says most result from debris burning.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
In Alaska, more than 2,000 children are in need of foster homes, and more than 1,200 of those children are Alaska Native. These children need homes where they can learn who they are. Alaska Native foster homes can help pass on traditions, arts, and culture. Help keep Alaska's children safe and their heritage strong. Learn more at 800-478-7307. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Sitka boat builder Allen Marine yesterday launched three new vessels constructed for seismic exploration of the ocean floor. The 64-foot catamarans were ordered by Houston-based Geokinetics Incorporated, which does contract work for the major oil producers. The boats are not the prettiest craft afloat, but as KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports, they can travel literally anywhere in the world.
Designed purely for function, the CATs serve as mobile platforms for sonic mapping. As Allen Marine Project Manager Ken Baker explains it, one of the boats will be used to deploy an air cannon for generating underwater shockwaves. The other two will string a sonic net to capture and analyze the reflections from the seafloor. Clearly, you can't do this with just any old boat.
A big stainless steel unit with six arrays of what they call guns, and then the computers will fire these off
into
these things, and they'll actually be a compressed air, it won't be a shell, but it'll be a compressed air explosion taking part on this underwater. This fires a shockwave down through the seabed, underneath the seabed itself. It bounces off rock formations, oil formations, whatever, underneath there. And they pick up this. The signal comes back as a very, very faint signal, very faint, in amongst the background of all kinds of sea animals, sea noises and things like that. But because they know the exact timing that this gun goes off and the exact timing that the cable receives the signal back, they can actually look at it on a computer and know exactly where that shot is and the intensity of the shot. And from that information, over hundreds of shots, they can work out and actually produce a map of what actually happens under the sea.
The contract with GeoKinetics, the purchaser of the boats, is worth nearly $4 million. Over $1 million per boat sounds like a lot until you consider that Allen is also building the auxiliary equipment for each craft, gantries to lower skiffs, cable storage bins, and so on, and also supplying a crew to travel with the boats and put them together wherever they're needed. That's right, these boats disassemble. They can be transported by truck, barge, rail, and even by Russia's huge Antonov cargo plane. Take some wrenches, a skilled crew, a week or two, and 4,000 bolts later, you've got a 64-foot shallow water seismic research boat.
The hulls themselves break into three pieces, two hulls and a center deck area. In between the hulls there, you'll see there's a big pattern of bolts that actually bolt the actual hulls together. And then the wheel houses will break into two pieces and be removed. Everything above the deck will be removed. So the boats will be able to be put onto a transport truck. We're organizing transport. Right now there's going to be around 13 trucks.
The boats will be loaded onto the 13 trucks after sea trials and barged to Skagway. From there, they'll go by road to Inuvik in the Mackenzie River Basin in the Northwest Territories of Canada. Company Vice President Tom Scheidt hopes that there might be more work like this coming for Allen Marine, although the company's tour operation has around 30 of its own vessels in service each summer. Allen has always prided itself in doing the extreme. While they were building their summer fleet over the past dozen years, Allen also built 19 aluminum ferries, 13 catamarans, and 6 monohulls for New York Waterways, which serves Manhattan. Building more take-apart catamarans should be, well, a walk in the park.
And that's where we kind of got into the swing of being able to build multiple boats at one time.
So if you got into a production situation with a boat like this, it wouldn't be unprecedented for you to make it
we've
all
had, well, no. We had 5 catamarans, New York Waterway catamarans, under construction at one time.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of jockeying around in there. We had to move all the vessels to get the engines in and then move them back, you know, to put them in the other side.
Scheidt says the GeoKinetics contract kept about 30 skilled workers employed in the Allen Marine shop, most of them aluminum welders. The boats will be called GeoTiger 2, 3, and 4. They're powered by twin Caterpillar diesel engines and Hamilton jet drives. The Allen Marine launching had no champagne or fanfare of any kind. Ken Baker said that the company has launched so many boats that the guys don't even come out of the shop to watch anymore. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Petersburg's curbside recycling program may be able to continue with some city funding and oversight. The Petersburg Indian Association started the pilot program nearly 5 years ago, but it's set to end next month because the grant that paid for it has run out. Now the city's sanitation department is proposing a plan to keep the effort going. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
The city of Petersburg's been advertising to hire a contractor that can collect recyclable materials around town and deliver them to the sanitation facilities, essentially the same service that the Petersburg Indian Association has been providing. The grant that covered PIA's cost for that program has run out. Petersburg Public Works Director Carl Hagerman says the city is trying to find a way to keep the service going.
The city recognizes that this is a service that is helping to defer some disposal costs and divert some of the waste stream. And so we're trying to fill that void, and right now we're soliciting for interested businesses that are qualified and have the resources to provide recycling collection services to the city.
Hagerman's included $36,000 for the service in the city's proposed budget. He says PIA has done a great job with the program, but the city still has to go through the public process of requesting proposals. He expects the tribe's experience will give it an advantage in that process. Hagerman says the award will ultimately be based on the applicant's qualifications rather than a low bid.
When you're talking about collections of a waste stream or potential waste stream, you know, it needs to be done reliably and dependably, And the company that does it has to have the resources to perform that task if somebody's sick or if a piece of equipment is down. And so the best way to ensure that the collection is done reliably is to go through this type of a process instead of just going with a low bidder. Anybody can throw a number at a project, but to show that they can perform reliably and dependably is more important in this case.
The city's accepting proposals until the afternoon of May 12th. Whoever wins the contract, Hagerman is hopeful that people who use the service won't notice too much of a disruption.
It'll be a change, but essentially we're hoping that it'll be seamless between to move from PIA control to city control of the program.
The Petersburg Indian Association started the free curbside collection program nearly 5 years ago in cooperation with the city. The money originally came from the Environmental Protection Agency's Indian General Assistance Program, or IGAP. According to Assistant PIA Administrator Will Ware, the curbside collection service cannot bring in enough money to cover its own costs, and the IGAP grant funding has come to an end.
Really, the program is designed to start environmental programs, but within the first couple of years, it should have built capacity to sustain itself. And as I think most people realize, is that shipping out the recycling, I think we generate enough to nearly pay for the shipping of the product to get out, but to actually sustain a program on its own in its entirety, it just doesn't generate enough revenue to do that.
Ware says the tribe is applying for the city contract, and he's optimistic the program will be able to continue.
The way it looks right now, from the city's request for qualifications, and they put in their rural-specific process of how they want it done, it follows along what we're doing already. We've worked in this with a partnership with the city now for, like I said, going on to our fifth year. So we're confident that we'd be able to continue on with the same services that has been provided thus far.
Meanwhile, Ware says the PIA has committed to continuing its recycling collection through the end of the month. According to Ware, about 225 households and most local businesses are signed up for the service. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Len Anderson in Anchorage, Angela Denning Barnes and Shane Iverson in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Does your child not look at you when you talk to him? Are you worried your child doesn't play with other children? Or do you wonder why your child seems to be in her own world? Well, these could be the early signs of autism. For more information about autism and resources in your community, visit autism.alaska.gov or call 1-800-799-7570. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. 90% of those who drown in boating accidents in Alaska are men. To get men to wear their life jackets, have them fill out a Pledge to Live card and make a promise to wear their life jacket every time they get in a boat. Every time. Most men won't listen to messages like this, but they might listen to you. Go to pledgetolive.org to get a card or find one at your local car Safeway. Make them promise so they make it back alive. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.